You are now entering a world that is neither fake nor real. A place where the exist don't exist and the unexistents do exist. A place where demons roam and UFOs fly. You are currently now entering the Ultra Nerd Podcast. Hello, folks, for another episode of the Ultra Nerd Podcast. But besides just that of the Twilight Zone reference intro, I'm going to do a full-fledged small episodes of Spooky Month for this October for the podcast. Now, before I continue on, I just want to say you guys could actually really help me out by just listening to the podcast alone. Really, I do kind of get paid through Anchor. Normally, if you guys can help me out by listening to the podcast, you're actually helping me out a lot. For every time you listen to the podcast, you're helping me increase my normal revenue. Now, normally, you could help me with stuff like putting food on the table, paying them bills, and sadly, college books aren't cheap, sadly. So really, you're helping me out a lot when you listen to my podcast. So if you have anyone you know that does like anything nerd-related, please direct them to this podcast. So, let me talk about more to the Spooky Month special for the Ultra Nerd Podcast. Normally, I would post for every Sunday, right? But for this time only, I'm going to be posting episodes on some Saturdays, but mainly Sundays as well. So, I'm going to try to do 7 episodes in total in honor of Spooky Month. So, let's get into it, shall we? Horror is something that's been on through the ages of time itself. Either if it's fear of something else, like say clowns or spiders, or the fear of the unknown. Horror has always been a form of something for media for a while now. Either if it's being told ghost stories over an open campfire, seeing the next Friday the 13th horror movie in theaters, or playing something that you might regret later. But besides just that, horror does take different types of forms in media. But my personal favorite type of horror is the fear of the unknown. Now, the idea of the fear of the unknown came from an author named Howard Philip Lovecraft, or otherwise known as H.P. Lovecraft. Now, Lovecraft has been known for a plethora of things, from The Shadows Over Innsmouth to The Dunwich Horror, or my personal favorite, Dagon. H.P. Lovecraft did make a big impact of the horror genre during his time through when he was born on August 20th of 1890 to when he died in the 1937. Sorry, I was reading off a script here. But even though H.P. Lovecraft did have his own ups when it comes to making his stories, the guy was, I'm going to be blunt with you, even though I do like his work, the guy was kind of messed up in the head, not going to lie. It's best to say what he wasn't when you look at his history. Okay, so he basically grew up without a dad. His mother basically shepherded him in his house the entire time. He didn't make that many friends as a kid. At one point, when his mom died when he was an adult, that also threw him into an exponential depression there. And he basically hated everything and anything that wasn't his hometown of Rhode Island. So yeah, basically. But another downside that H.P. Lovecraft is he was racist, not gonna lie. But to me, really, even though if you look at his work, if you look at it one side or another, to me personally, it's not about the idea that he was racist or the idea of the monsters. It's the idea that we're just little pawns in a bigger game, that everything around us is so big, and yet our planet and our solar system is much like a grain of sand in a desert. And that's what's scary about his work. And the crazy thing is about H.P. Lovecraft of how much of an impact his work actually got onto people and to other creators. He inspired a plethora of things from video games to other spin-off books to videos to movies, to I already said video games, I nearly said it again, I'm sorry, to Yu-Gi-Oh cards, and for some reason, but it's a interesting reason, a interesting dating simulator. Let me repeat that again. A dating simulator. Oh, but just a sec. I'm just gonna get off topic really quick. And a while ago, I also want to say that he also, for some reason, inspired people to create a children's cartoon. Now, I follow a YouTuber on Twitter named Saberspark. Follow him. He's a good guy. And he basically was like, "Hey guys, what movie should I watch for this October?" And I picked when I first saw the Howard Phillips Lovecraft one, that initially shocked me because it's Lovecraft. How the heck can you decide to make a movie off of H.P. Lovecraft? And normally, because when I think of Lovecraft, I don't think of like, oh, fairy tales and Prince Charming and Cinderella and there's a musical number. No, when I think of Lovecraft, I think of the unknown, Cthulhu, Dagon, and monstrous abominations that our human minds cannot comprehend. But let's just throw all of that out the window and make a kids movie from it instead. So that's another thing you could say that H.P. Lovecraft, if you guys can't tell what I'm doing here quotes right now, inspired. But really, it's not going to talk about, I'm not going to be talking about the movie. Maybe. But besides just that, I want to talk about a very interesting movie that I saw a while ago that I felt really took the idea of the fear of the unknown. That is a movie called In the Mouth of Madness. Now, In the Mouth of Madness was a movie made in the 90s, directed by John Carpenter, and it had a budget of over $14 million and only made under that. Now, to me, when I was looking on the ratings for it, it has a over 59% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 53% on Metacritic. When I first saw the movie, I thought it was actually pretty interesting overall, where the movie actually, I felt, was a really big love letter to Lovecraft and some of his works, where it made some references, such as the name itself, In the Mouth of Madness, was really a reference to one of his stories, At the Mountains of Madness. And I believe there was like another, it's been a while since I saw the movie, folks, so I'm sorry if I may skip some things, but I can remember most of it if I can. But it also had some things such as referencing Gilman's Hotel from like The Shadows Over Innsmouth. It also was referencing the what else? The Dunwich Horror. Yes, it was referencing the Dunwich Horror. Now, when I first watched the movie, you would think it would be a horror movie, but it kinda is and kinda isn't, I really would say. But really, the movie is more like a, I want to say a mind-boggling movie, which I see when you watch the movie, you kind of could see where they were coming from, because the idea from what H.P. Lovecraft does is basically make one question his own sanity from what he's able to see in the world that is Arkham. But really, it is kind of hard to see that the first time, but I swear to you, it is a really interesting movie once you get into it. But besides just that, let's talk about the movie, shall we? It begins off with an interesting thing where our main character is already going into the loony bin, and he's meted by a shadowy figure of unknown identity or etc. And basically, we cut back into the past before everything we've seen so far happened. And basically, what we see is him all normal and his actual cop, right? Now, basically, this one crazy guy tried to attack him with an axe, but was eventually gunned down by police. And eventually, a book studio was calling him, saying that they need him to find a missing author of theirs that has a big seller of his books, but for some reason, but for a big reason, most of the people there would be insane every time they would listen to his books. So, him and another, and him, no, wait, sorry. Sorry, folks, if I'm stuttering. Him and one person that the studio works for goes with him to eventually find this author in an unknown location that's not even been marked in a map. Now you'll see where I'm saying going with this at the end. So later on, they would eventually go into a town where they believe this author by the name of Sutter Kane was there to begin with. And eventually they started finding out that they might be in the book, but the detective is disagreeing with that. Now he said something in the movie that is actually really interesting, because eventually they did find the author in this big castle, right? And for some reason, this town starts going haywire they were in. Like, the detective was starting to see things that he can't comprehend. The character he's been assigned with is starting to act weird, and everything else is starting to act weird from there on out, right? And eventually, he said something that does make sense to a lot of H.P. Lovecraft's work, and that is, this isn't reality. And throughout the movie, he tries to show that reality is something that they're currently in, or the other way around. Like, what they're in now is reality. Like, he eventually, like, at one point, he knocked on a dresser and he said, "See that? Reality." But when he said, "This isn't reality," he's mentioning the fact that he's not in a story that's been written by Sutter Kane. Now, this is what the unknown really does, because we may not know it, but we may be our chess, may be a chess piece to a bigger game of beings that we don't even know were existed or were about in the first place. And that's what makes H.P. Lovecraft's work so scary. Now, eventually, at one point, he meets the author face to face, and he says something that does support my first statement that we're like chess pieces. He says, "You are what I write. This town and the lady you were with didn't exist until I written them." And eventually it does this really cool effect in the movie where he starts to peel himself off like pieces of paper from a book, and he released like this hordes of abominations, like chasing this one detective holding like something in his hands, presumably the book of the author, and tries to escape them, but he eventually did. Now, normally, I forgot to mention this to begin with, the books are much like a ritual. Every time someone reads them, bad things start to happen. The author just needs to release his last book for his ritual to be completed. And eventually, obviously the policeman doesn't want to deliver the books, but when he got back and said when he found Sutter Kane, he didn't know that the people who set him up with it told him that he already received, no wait, he already gave the book to them a few weeks ago, and the person that he was with never was hired nor existed with them in the first place. Now, eventually, he ended up like the guy who was wielding the axe, who was Southern Kane's agent, eventually actually murdering someone and got to the loony bin because of it. Now, here's the interesting thing, really, because most of H.P. Lovecraft's stories, no one has a happy ending. No one goes off with their Prince Charming or lives happily ever after. If you read any of H.P. Lovecraft's work, it's mainly someone going insane, going to the asylum, or in case if you read Shadows Over Innsmouth, then you're a fish person and you realize being a fish person is awesome. But besides just that, at the end, our character does go to the loony bin, but when bad stuff starts to happen, he found out in a movie theater that everything that happened to him recently was on the big screen. So the literal beginning of the movie was being played in the movie while he's watching the movie. Now, even though that this may not be I want to say the best H.P. Lovecraft movie I've seen, it does hold up to what H.P. Lovecraft is all about, and that's the fear of the unknown. Like, we don't know anything about the Southern Kane to begin with. All we do know is that he's a author. He's most likely a psychopath. He has I want to say, a very godlike complex to him. But not only that, but he's able to literally write and erase people out of existence. And when you find out that you're a part of his story, you don't even know what happened until he written it in his text, in his book, or typed it down on his typewriter next. Now, that is a really scary idea to think about. But I'll talk about another movie that, when I think about it now, is also H.P. Lovecraft. Now, wasn't that a really good sponsor, my friends? But let's get into another movie that I feel is a H.P. Lovecraft related when you think about it. But I'm not gonna lie, it's probably the poorly one out of every movie I've seen so far. So let's talk about the In the Tall Grass by Stephen King. In the Tall Grass is a, I really want to say, a very, very mediocre horror movie I've seen in my life. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, who remembers an episode or a cutaway gag from The Simpsons where Stephen King is sitting right in front of his publisher and he's like, "Oh, no, wait, wait." But the family is then attacked by a haunted lamp, and he's like, "Oh, ooh, ah," and he's like, and his publisher is like, "Stephen, please be serious." And then it cuts away to Stephen just like poking the lamp at him, going, "Rah, rah, rah, rah." And then his sponsor is ending with the, "When will you publish it?" That's basically this movie to me. That's basically this movie. And honestly, I think a haunted lamp would be much scarier than grass. So the movie starts off with these two siblings driving out across country so one of them could deliver a baby for a new family for them. And eventually they stopped because the sibling that was pregnant wasn't feeling so hot in the car ride. And eventually they stopped in front of a church and they hear some kid screaming, right? Now, when you hear someone screaming in a place you're not familiar with, the smartest decision is to not go in. But these kids, they're like, "Oh no, we gotta help the kid. He's lost, despite the fact that he's literally across from us, like 2 steps away." Now, besides just that, they go into the tall grass. One of them finds a dead dog, and the crazy thing about it is when they actually move, they're moving with the grass. Now, let me explain. At one point in the movie, when they jumped, they saw each other that were very close, right? But when they jumped again, that closeness they had went from miles to where they originally were. And eventually it slowly got dark outside, and the brother met a little kid, and he's like, "You gotta follow me." And eventually they took him to this giant rock that was in the middle of the grass. The tall grass. That is a joke I don't want to do now. But besides just that, the brother eventually heard his sister scream and starts running towards them, right? So eventually it became morning, and there was like this one guy who came up to the front of the church and saw the sibling's car. Now, this could be a rel another relative or an interest between either the brother or the sister, right? Right. So anyway, besides just that, what happened was that he also went into the grass. And eventually he started making paths or like these little checkpoints in the grass. As smart as it is, for some reason, the grass is sentient and started to make itself form normally again. And eventually, he gets lost and he meets this boy to that the sibling met again. But eventually, he started following him to where the girl who was pregnant, and he found her sadly dead. He started crying about it, and eventually it became morning. He was tired, he was hungry, and eventually he heard the voices of this family, of this little boy, and the two parents of probably, most likely his, I mean, sorry, most likely his parents, obviously. But besides just that, eventually the family gets lost in the grass, and next thing we knew, everyone, both the siblings, this little boy, and this one of the siblings' boyfriend, all came together in a big happy family. And eventually they started walking in the grass, walking in the grass, and walking in the grass, until eventually, this is where it gets weird, folks, because at one point, the character who is pregnant starts feeling something funny inside her. And she was like cramping down, and like for some reason, you see grass, like legit grass, it where the baby is for some reason. I don't know why, but there's grass in there for some reason. And I'm like thinking to myself, like, holy smokes, is this gonna be like another Resident Evil scene? No, wait, not Resident Evil, Evil Dead, Evil Dead. That's a different segment for another day, folks. But besides just that, it's like it's stupid, really. To be honest, rewatching this movie the first time, you didn't know what to expect, but when I rewatched the second time to make sure if I didn't miss anything, it felt like it was taking forever. It felt like this movie was taking forever to finish in the first time, because that's literally the entirety of the idea of the movie. The character is literally walking in grass, tall grass, and that's it. There's something a little bit special about it, but sorry, it's not to a point where it's like a revelation or anything. But it's a really, really boring movie. Whereas the previous movie I just mentioned, which was In the Mouth of Madness, it may not click with some people, but at least it was still entertaining, I could argue. It's not like where people literally walking in grass and that's what it is, just basically that. But eventually, they met up, the group meet up with the father to the little boy, and he leads them to this big rock, as previously mentioned by before, and he touches the rock. And it basically gives him a knowledge of the maze. And he's like, all you gotta do is touch the rock. And he like really obsesses about it, about how much this rock could help you and how much it was here since the beginning of the world. And his wife came by and he was like, don't listen to him, don't listen to him. Wait a minute. She looks at the one other girl. Weren't you dead before? Now, this is the weird thing, folks. Now, normally, in the idea of H.P. Lovecraft, when there's like a catastrophic effect in the world, the idea is you can't stop it, but you can only prevent it. You can only slowly prevent it until eventually it does stop. Or, no, wait. Until the cataclysmic event does happen. But this is where it gets weird, folks, because apparently the grass has the ability to make cycles. Now, eventually, the first cycle was with the family going in after the boyfriend, and then the siblings go in after the kid screaming for help. And then it was the boyfriend going in to look for the siblings. Now, I don't know why, but eventually the father killed his own wife and eventually started hunting them down as prey, not before kicking the ass of the boyfriend. And then they start running like hell, where eventually they go into this bowling arena, and we already figured out that the siblings had some history with the boyfriend, and how the boy sibling hates him and hates his guts, and eventually they start fighting, and the little boy is like, "My father's right, we're nothing but grass." And eventually they went onto the roof. The brother did a Lion King reference and pushed the boyfriend out, and eventually when his sister finds out, she runs away from him, and when the father finds them, the boy starts running away, and the father there's like, you thought you can go right, then you can go left, but in all reality, boy, you've done all choices, and they all led to me, buddy, okay?" And he slowly starts to kill him. But when we see like these corpses upon corpses of the previous characters, which makes you think that this cycle has happened constantly before and before. But eventually, the girl starts to go up to the rock and meets up there. And like another weird thing starts to happen. She starts going into labor, and like you see like this ancient writing on the rock, and this is the only thing I found interesting, folks. This is small scene is what I only found interesting, where the earth around her and around the rock starts to open, and you like see like these roots in the rock connected to the earth, and like you see these other trapped souls in the dirt with it, as if they were already there before time. Now, a little interesting side note, I've always believed when I resaw that scene that the rock is pretty much like a seed, right? And that seed needs something to grow into a much more grander scale. Now, unlike the previous character that's pretty much embodies the idea of the unknown in H.P. Lovecraft, this kind of, not entirely, because it sucks, embodies the idea of H.P. Lovecraft's fear of the unknown. Even though we do know what it is, it's a rock that could give you the ability to be a bloodthirsty maniac. It has some kind of history with the earth and being able to have the ability to take control of others. But this is what happens. Eventually, the boyfriend and the boy meet up with the girl that's already dead with the father. The father gets killed, and the boyfriend touches the rock, and he was able to literally see the entirety of where he needs to go. He takes the boy, and for some reason, the boy ends up in the church. The boy ends up in the church, folks. And this is, I don't know why, like, I feel like not going in the grass was the first option, and I've been like, "Oh, wait, maybe we shouldn't go in the grass." Yeah, that maybe was the best plan. And drive on ahead. But eventually, the boy comes out of the church, he goes to the two siblings and warns them about the thing, and eventually they all drive off. Now, this is the most stupidest thing about the movie because, like I said, it's like a, as much as In the Mouth of Madness was a, like a movie that questions one's sanity, this movie is the one that questions your patience because it feels like it's trying to build something up into a much more grander scale, but yet it doesn't. And this is, I've seen some of Stephen King's work, like Pet Sematary, It, and Thinner, and those were good movies in my book. Those were good movies, but this one is not one of his best. But even though the reason why I say it's H.P. Lovecraft-like is the idea that this rock could have the potential of controlling anyone. Remember the cycle I mentioned. Basically, the one thing that the boyfriend helped with was ending the cycle, because eventually the twins and the little boy drive off, and eventually you see the boyfriend collapse dead. Now, normally when anyone touches the rock, they become I want to say an apostle for it. And basically it went from the little boy to the father, then to the boyfriend, who became its apostles. And I don't know if the boy did it, but I did know the dad would like most likely kill everyone in the tall grass for the rock. But the boyfriend was the only one who was able to end the cycle. Now, the only downside was he died in the end, and yes, that also portrays the idea of H.P. Lovecraft's work that not everyone gets a happy ending, but it does take the idea that we are just pawns of something else in a much more grander scale. And that's it for this episode of the spooky special of the Ultra Nerd Podcast. I would like to thank everyone for those who are listening. I promise I will try to keep more episodes like this up going. And I will try to post another episode tomorrow as well. Now, tomorrow's episode is going to be special, where it is going to relate something to more of a horror theme as well. Now, for those of you who wish to listen to more, please check out my other recent episodes I've made. And not only that, you could also follow me on Twitter at SuperNerd163. Also, I would like to thank everyone who is supporting me right now through Anchor and through who's ever listening. If you know anyone, once again, tell them to come right down to the Ultra Nerd Podcast. And remember, folks, geek is fleek.